Matthew chapter 5, please. Just turn to Matthew 5. We're going to get there in a second. When I was a child, there was an oath we used to take to convince our friends that we were really serious about keeping a promise that we made, or serious about the fact that we were telling the truth. You probably used it yourself. You remember? Cross my heart, hope to die. Oh, you know it. Is that a universal kid promise? Huh? Cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in mine. Now think about that for a moment. Stick a needle in my eye. Hey, that's a pretty heavy consequence for a young child, isn't it? I mean, you have to be pretty serious about the commitment you were making. You'd have to be pretty serious about what you were telling people if you're going to say, I promise and I'll stick a needle in my eye if I'm not telling the truth. Now, do you remember how a person could legally break even a cross my heart commitment without any repercussions? Cross your fingers. That's it. That's all you got to do, right? Just cross your fingers. I mean, you could commit to anything, and as long as you had your fingers crossed, you could renege with impunity. No problems? None at all. They couldn't touch you. I had my fingers crossed. All that oath-taking and finger-crossing stuff was pretty harmless when we were children. But folks, we're not children anymore. And yet it seems to me that many of us have kept right on using that finger-crossing technique. So we can justify breaking almost any commitment, especially when keeping the commitment becomes difficult, costly, or even inconvenient. And as a society, we are reaping the consequences of generations of finger-crossing in our commitments. Each year as a society, we spend billions of dollars to cover the cost of broken commitments in business, in marriage, and in society in general. Beyond the monetary cost, consider the personal, emotional, and spiritual cost of broken commitments. I think many people here today know the pain of discovering that someone we trusted, a parent, a spouse, a child, a friend, an employee, or a coworker, apparently had their fingers crossed when they made those cross-my-heart promises to us. And we still feel the pain of those broken commitments. It has shaped the way we view the world and people, and may even shape the way we view God. That's why the words of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount are so relevant for us today. Look at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 33. Matthew 5 and verse 33. Jesus said again, you have heard that it has been said of those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oath to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Now, in this text, Jesus calls us to a new and different way of living. Jesus is calling his followers to be people of integrity. Now, the word integrity, by the way, means wholeness or consistency. Some synonyms for integrity would be credibility, character, fidelity, honesty, reliability, and morality. A person with integrity is consistent in what he says and what he does. His word is his bond. Having integrity means in your life there's no gap between the way things are and the way things ought to be. There's consistency. There's wholeness. You are who you should be. You do what you say you will do. In our text, Jesus says to his followers, simply let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. Jesus said to his followers that we should be able to make a one-word verbal commitment to each other And once those commitments are made, the word should be binding. The deal would be done. Finger crossing was simply not an option for the family of God. Can you imagine living in a world where "I'll be there" meant they'd be there? Where "you can count on me" meant that you could count on them? Where "yes" meant yes and "no" meant no? The whole world would be a very different place, wouldn't it? Well, Jesus wants the world to be like that, and he wants his followers to lead the way, to set the standard. Let me share with you two reasons why integrity is so important in our lives. First of all, integrity reflects the character of the covenant-keeping God. Integrity reflects the character of a covenant-keeping God. From cover to cover, the Bible reveals God to be one who makes commitments to us, and then he keeps them every time. Just read through the Bible and see how God has committed himself to us over and over and over. For example, let me read you a few. You can either try to keep up with me in these or just jot these references down. John 11, 25 and 26, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live." And listen to this. "Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this? Hebrews 13, 5 says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you." Psalm 37, 28. "For the Lord loves justice, and he does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off." Isaiah 41, 10. "Fear not, I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Now that's commitment. And when God makes a commitment, he keeps it no matter what the cost, even when it leads him to Calvary. Now, friends, I want you to understand, God keeps his promises every time. When he says something, he means it every time. He always keeps his word. God's fingers are never crossed. It's like, "Oh, I told you that, but I had my fingers crossed. I don't have to keep that one." He always keeps his word. Do you? Ephesians 5:1 says this, "Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children." You familiar with that scripture? "Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children." He is calling believers to imitate God, to mimic God. And every time we make a commitment and keep it, every time we keep our word, we are reflecting the fact that we are imitators of the covenant-keeping God. And when people see his commitment-keeping character in us, they'll be drawn to him because it's contagious. Believe me, folks, if anything, the world today is looking for people who mean what they say and say what they mean. But there's another reason why Jesus calls us to live lives of integrity, and it's this. Authentic biblical community depends on it. Authentic biblical community, our church, a biblical community depends on integrity. We can't have authentic Christian community without integrity. The early church was built on integrity. They were true to their commitments to God and to each other. In Acts 2:42, it says of the disciples, "And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, in fellowship, in breaking of bread, and in prayer." Speaking of that early church, that was characteristic of them. And the words "continued steadfastly" come from the Greek word proskertereo, a word that means to make a binding promise or pledge. At its heart, it has to do with enduring or sticking to something even when it would be easier not to. You know, it's impossible to have real friendships, healthy marriages, growing small groups or churches, unless we know we can count on one another to be there to fulfill our commitments. No matter what, regardless of how we might change or how our circumstances might change, regardless of the cost, authentic Christ-honoring community depends on integrity. That's why Jesus says, "In my kingdom, My people will be as good as their word. Their yes will mean yes and their no will mean no. When they make a commitment, they'll keep it. Today we're going to look at three things you can do to maintain or regain a position of integrity in your life. First of all, number one, we must mean what we say and say what we mean. That might sound basic, but that's not happening in Christianity today. We need to say what we mean what we say. This text in Matthew calls us to a radical honesty. Let's get very specific here. Have you ever said something like this? I'll be praying for you. And deep down in your heart, you had no intention at all of praying for that person. So what did you just do? You lied. Remember, a person with integrity is consistent in what he says and what he does. If you say you're going to pray for somebody, pray for them. Write it down so you remember to do that. Ever said to someone, we're going to get together for lunch or dinner sometime real soon? When you know that's about as likely as happening as you being included on the next space shuttle mission. You know? Or have you ever made it a commitment to attend an event, whether here at church or in the community, and you said, count me in, I'll be there. But in your heart, you had your fingers crossed, and what you really meant was something like this. I'll be there unless the sun's shining and I have absolutely nothing else to do. Now you might be thinking, well, nobody really takes those things seriously. It's just kind of the grease that keeps relationships moving smoothly. No one expects us to keep our word on that. Well, friends, I believe God does. I think He really does. Those casual commitments matter. Now, sometimes we're going to make commitments with the best of intentions, and for a variety of reasons, something's going to come up that we never anticipated, and we're going to get derailed from keeping the commitments we made. That's going to happen from time to time. What Jesus is getting at here is, does your yes mean yes, or does it mean maybe? Or does your yes mean no? How good is your word? Can people count on you to do what you say you will do? That's integrity. Look at me at Proverbs 21:1. Proverbs 21:1. See if you believe this. Now, I know we say we believe the Bible, but do you believe this verse? Proverbs 21:1. It says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Loving favor rather than silver or gold. Do you believe that? You run into that sort of moral platitude all through the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is, among other things, a textbook on practical advice on how to live in order to have a good life. A good name speaks of character. It speaks of integrity. A good name, that's what your name encompasses, not just, you know, your name like Dave or Bob or Sue. It's who people say you are. You know, the Bible says the name of God is a strong tower and we run into it because we know God's character, we trust it. What your name refers to here is who you are, what people think of you. Let me tell you, there are some people, and when I'm talking to them and they say, well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and in my mind, because I try not to be rude outwardly at least, in my mind I say, yeah, right. Because I know they have no character, no integrity in my mind. Because over and over they tell you something and not do it. There's other people who say to me, I'll do this. It's as good as done in my mind. Because I know they're people of integrity. I know when they say something, they're going to do it. No matter what, they're going to do what they said they'd do because their word is important to them. Well, which kind of person are you? Integrity. It's doing what you say. On the cover of Time magazine back in the 80s were these words, whatever happened to the ethics? Assaulted by sleaze, scandals, and hypocrisy, America searches for its moral bearings. The article was a devastating revelation of moral crisis. It said, in effect, that when offered the choice between silver and gold or a good name, Americans go for the gold. We don't care about our name. We don't care. But see, we have to understand we are to be imitators of God. Now, sometimes we make casual commitments sincerely with the best of intentions, but sometimes even as we say them, we know that we have our fingers crossed. We don't have any intention of doing what we said we would do. Why do we do that? I think often we do it because we just want to be a good guy, good lady. We don't want to have to say no or Don't want to have to say, I can't do that right now. We don't want to hurt people's feelings when they're standing in front of us, but we create a whole lot more pain in the long run than if we had just spoken the truth and love about our limitations and our ability to commit to them. We need to just let our yes be yes and our no be no. We need to work on this. We need to ask God to give us an increasing sensitivity to what we say to people. We need to learn to say no when we know we can't do something. And yes, only when we have every intention of doing it. And when we say yes, we need to follow through on it, even when it costs us. Turn over with me to Psalms 15. I want you to see here that in Psalm 15, David gives us several character traits of the person who is dwelling in fellowship with God. The person who is living in an intimate, vital relationship with the living God. And this whole psalm gives us character traits, what these people are all about. Psalm 15. David said, Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? The idea is here is dwelling in the presence of God. It's having fellowship with God. These are the character traits of the person who dwells in fellowship with God. It says, he who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. All right, he's a truth teller. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put out his money to usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved. The idea is there, you're in the presence of God, you're living a righteous, holy life. But I want us to specifically note verse 4. And listen to how the translation God's Word puts this verse. 15:4, the last half, it says, the one who makes a promise and does not break it, even though he is hurt by it. That's what integrity is. You make a commitment. You say you're going to do something, you do it, it doesn't matter what it costs you, because it'll cost you your integrity if you don't do it. And what's your integrity worth? He swears to his own hurt. In other words, I'll do something, and then he realizes, oh, that's too difficult, that's too costly. He does it anyway. He doesn't change. The person of integrity keeps their word, even when it costs them greatly to do so. Now, I don't think Jesus intends this to be some new kind of legalistic straitjacket. But I believe he is asking us to be sensitive to the commitments we make, because God takes them seriously. And often the people who we make them to take them seriously, and they should. Our word should be good. We shouldn't say something and people wonder, well, I wonder what they really meant by that. I wonder if they'll show up, they'll not show up, they'll keep their word. Our word should be our bond. They said it. Of course they'll be there. Now, I think it should go without saying that if people of integrity keep their casual commitments, that they also take very seriously the formal commitments, the formal vows that they take. In this passage in Matthew, Jesus is not outlawing the making of vows altogether. He's trying to undo the finger crossing when we make those oaths. But the Bible would readily affirm the usefulness of making formal vows, like a marriage vow, for example. The Bible's full of instances where men and women of God make legitimate vows. And they made them because they wanted to underscore the sense of purpose they felt in their spirit. They wanted to invoke God's name and go public with their vows. What's it mean to take an oath or a vow? Let's use the wedding vow, for example. When one swears or takes an oath, he is making a solemn declaration or statement with an appeal to God to bear witness to the truth of what he is affirming, denying, or promising. He is calling upon God to be witness, judge, and revenger if he is not speaking truthfully. And by taking an oath, he is guaranteeing the truth of his affirmation, denial, or promise. We read about this in Hebrews 6:16. It says this, men swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what is said and puts an end to all argument. It puts an end to it. They swore, they're going to do it. In a promissory oath, one appeals to God to witness to one's sincerity of heart and faithfulness of purpose. And if one fails to fulfill the promise, God is called on to judge and to punish him. And when a man and a woman stand up together in his presence before a crowd of people and say, I take you to be my wife or husband, I am promising to be faithful to you and to love you as Christ does no matter what happens in our circumstances, I'm committed to you no matter what. That is a vow that a couple takes before God, a vow that is not to be broken. And you are literally saying, asking God to render judgment, if that is. When I marry a couple, I try to take great pains that they might understand the seriousness of a wedding vow. And understand that they are entering into a vow before God, and the congregation are there as a witness to hold them accountable to the vows that they have taken. We live in what is fast becoming a commitment-free world. Everywhere we look, it seems that people are trading the power to make and keep commitments for the quick fix illusion of an uncommitted life. A life devoted to keeping options open so we don't get tied down with commitments that might get in the way of pursuing our happiness. In the midst of that kind of world, Jesus says, I want you to make commitments to God and to each other. But if you make them, I want you to take very seriously. And I want you to lean upon the grace of God to enable you to keep those commitments. Because when you do, it's going to make a difference. It's going to stand out. God will be honored, and the body will be held together and encouraged when they see people of integrity. People who do what they say even when it costs them. So how are you doing on commitments that you've made? We must understand that our commitments matter. They matter to God because they reflect His character, and they're essential to developing authentic biblical community. How can we dwell together with one another if we can't trust one another, if our word doesn't mean what we say? Let me ask you a question. How are you feeling right now? Chances are, if you're paying attention, some of us are feeling a little uncomfortable. Some are uncomfortable because deep in our heart, we want to be a person who can make commitments and keep them. We want to be a person of integrity. But up to this point, our track record maybe isn't so good. Maybe we have broken some of the very serious commitments and we wonder if it's ever possible to start over. Some of us have been so wounded by broken commitments from others, we're terrified of committing ourselves to anything or anyone, where our commitment might not be returned in kind. Listen, you need to know that there is grace and good news in our text for each and every one of us who struggle with making and keeping commitments. Our text tells us that there is power available from God to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, power to make and keep commitments. Look at that text in Matthew 5. Jesus said, "But I say unto you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it's God's throne, nor by earth, for it is His footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great King. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you can't make one hair black or white." What is He saying here? He says, you're all making these commitments and you're sealing them with these elaborate oaths to try to convince the people that you're going to do it. You know, you're trying to convince them. You don't normally tell the truth, so now you're trying to add all these things on to make people, "Oh, I swear by the temple, I swear by this, I swear by that." He said, you still got your fingers crossed is the problem. You can't control heaven or earth or Jerusalem. You can't control the hairs on your head. But God is bigger than those things, and you might swear by anything you want to, but you don't have the power to do it unless you're trusting Him, unless you're dependent upon Him to give you the grace to keep the commitments that you made. So He says, just say yes and no. And then lean on the transforming grace of God to help you keep your word. The power to make and the power to keep commitments is something we can't do just by gritting our teeth and trying to work it out. But supernatural power is available if we would be dependent upon God. If we would learn to trust Him, rely on Him, lean on Him. He'll give us all the resources we need to become people of integrity, regardless of our past record. Regardless of the current circumstance, regardless of how uncertain the future might be, He offers abundant, unlimited grace and forgiveness to all who have broken commitments so they can begin again and take a fresh run at it. There's no broken commitment that God can't forgive. He offers us His very presence. God Himself has taken up residence in our lives, and He enables us to manifest the very character of Him through being people of integrity when we trust Him. He also offers us a family of believers, the church, who can pray for us, who can encourage us, who can hold us accountable and give us grace that we might struggle together to keep the commitments we have made to God and to one another. That's all available to us. The question is, will we avail ourselves to it? Well, the second thing we need to understand in maintaining or regaining a position of integrity in your life is that there is never a good excuse to compromise your integrity. Never a good excuse to compromise your integrity. What will it take for you to compromise your integrity? Let me tell you this. If you have a price, I want you to know today that someone will pay it. If you have a price, someone will pay it. Your boss, your friends, maybe even your family. If your integrity is for sale, someone will buy it. What's it going to take? Money? Sex? A promotion? Acceptance? Approval? Whatever your price is, someone is going to pay it. If you want to narrow the gap between the way things are in your life and the way things ought to be, you have to become a person who cannot be bought. There will always be many reasons why you can compromise your integrity. There will never be a good reason. You know, and many times we're faced with a circumstance where we get too much change or someone didn't put something on our bill and we think, hey, it's just a gift, you know, instead of going to them and telling them. Next time you do that, figure out how much change you got back. That's how much you just sold your integrity for. What's it worth? What's your integrity cost you? What's it worth to sell? There's never a good reason to compromise your integrity. The third thing about maintaining or regaining your integrity is this. Your private life must match your public life. Your private life must match your public life. If you were to go to a movie studio and look at the set of the small town Main Street that they use in a whole number of different movies, I think the detail of the set would amaze you. You know, the trees are real out front. The sidewalks are real. The front of the stores are authentic in every detail. The price of sirloin is posted on the grocer's window. A help wanted sign hangs in the drugstore, and there's a spit and whittle bench in front of the barbershop. Everything about the town looks genuine. But on the other side of the street, there's nothing but plywood and 2x4s. On the screen, everything looks real, but behind the scenes, it's easy to see that it's just a fake set. You know, that's how some of us organize our lives. We manage to make everything look great on the surface, but the view from behind the scenes reveals a different story. It's easy to make your personal life look good on the surface. The only way to make the appearance real on a deeper level is to have a foundation of integrity. Integrity means that our lives are the same behind the scenes as they are on camera. A lady wrote Miss Manners wondering what to do about her husband. Maybe some of you guys will recognize this. She said something to the effect of, he eats like a slob at home. When we're out in public, he puts on his best behavior. I'd say be thankful for that. But when he's alone with me, he gulps his food, he talks with his mouth full, he uses his sleeve as a napkin, and he belches at the table. She went on to say, when I complain about this, he just says, it's my own home, I ought to be able to be myself. Miss Manner's reply was basically, isn't it a shame that we label our worst behavior as being ourselves, and our best behavior is putting on airs? You know, maybe you can put on and take off table manners at will, but it doesn't work that way with integrity. Integrity requires that our private life be consistent with our public life, that we act the same whether people are watching or not. That's integrity. If you feel that you have compromised your integrity, if the way things are in your life aren't the way things ought to be, if it doesn't, it doesn't mean that you've become worthless. It doesn't mean that you're useless. It does mean you have to take the necessary steps to start making things right in your life. Stop making excuses. Mean what you say and get things in order. You can't live on yesterday's integrity, nor should yesterday's mistakes keep holding you back. Integrity is now. It's an ongoing process, and we have to live it out in every single day of our lives. Maintaining your integrity or regaining your integrity is a matter of meaning what you say and saying what you mean, getting rid of the excuses, and doing what it takes to get things in order. This will enable you to narrow the gap between the way things are and the way things ought to be. Friends, what would happen in our relationships, our neighborhoods, our businesses, our church, if each of us made the decision today to respond to Jesus' words and let our yes mean yes and our no mean no? What would happen if we stopped the finger crossing in our commitments? What would happen if we just said to God, I want to be like you. I want to be a person of integrity. I want to be a commitment keeper, no matter what it costs me. You think it'd make a difference in our world? Let's find out. Let's find out. Be imitators of God, we are told. We know when God makes a promise to us, we can count on it. Shouldn't we be the same? We need to quit playing verbal games. Quit hiding behind words and be truthful to one another. What a difference it would make. We wouldn't need to swear by different things. We could just say something and people would say, look, I know them. They have a good name. They're a person of integrity. What they say is good. Let's stand behind them. Let's pray.